Welcome to the Learning Reinvented podcast, brought to you by myself, James Politilo.
And Katie Godden from The Learning Effect. There are lots of learning podcasts out there, so we wanted to do something slightly different. This week, we are exploring the changes learning teams are making. I'm delighted to welcome Keith Waite to the podcast. Thank you for joining us, Keith. Do you want to introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James. It's my pleasure to be here. Yes, my name is Keith Waite. I have been in the learning business for decades now. I spent most of my time in the financial services world, in particular risk management. I had my own business called Consultancy Matters that actually does a lot of consulting work for risk management, learning and development. And I'm currently the EVP at the DCRO Institute, that is responsible for education at the board level. And most of my career, as I said, has been in learning and development, and I've had a particular interest in learning behaviour.
So Keith, given that background and what you're seeing at the moment, how do you think learning behaviour has changed over recent times?
That's a good question. Let me just caveat it by saying that most of my focus has been on the corporate world and for people between the ages of about 21 and 35. So that's where my focus is. And also to say that it's very easy to generalize about what's going on in the learning world and how people learn. And most of, again, my experience has been really in the Western world and the Middle East, although a lot of this now applies to the Far East as well. I think when it comes to learning behavior, there are really three things to look at. One is the physiological side of it, as well as the social and environmental impacts on it. But what I've seen in my years is that people have moved from content learning to context learning. Now, what does that mean? It means that we've all been very used to in previous lives, and certainly in my life at an early stage, in learning by content, either learning rote or learning the content and being able to then translate that during an examination. Nowadays, people are much more focused on contextual learning, which is learning by picking up things from different parts of social media or different parts of bulletins and books, and putting it together and understanding the context in which that thing is important. We've also seen that the social environmental side of things has helped. The internet has helped, social media has helped, that you can actually access so much about a particular issue and learn from different angles. And that's really what people are looking at now. On top of that is that the issue, as you may well know, of immediate gratification. People want to know something, they want to know it now. They don't want to have to take a 1,000-hour course and take an exam to be able to know it. They want it now. And therefore, there's really very much a rush to the answer now. People really want to know what they want to know as and when they need it, as opposed to as and when they're told to learn it. And in that way, academia in its current form has become less valuable to people. People want to know the skills to do things because they want to know how to do it now. They want to know less about the academic content that we're used to seeing in universities and so on. What that really means is that when you look at learning, I see it in three ways. One is it's a content of learning. Then there is the delivery of that learning to the learner. And then the third thing is the purpose of that learning. Now, what I see now, as we've moved away from the importance and the priority of the content into the delivery of that content. But what we're also starting to see is the purpose of that actual learning, because now we're seeing so much more ways of delivering it and the amount of content that can be delivered in multiple ways. I think people are losing sight of the real purpose of what they need to learn. So there's a lot of trivia out there that needs to be filtered and curated. And that's when we come to people looking at the purpose now.
How do you think learning specialists have responded to the change in learning behavior?
Well, yes, that's a good point. And first of all, I guess from my point of view, when we talk about learning specialists, my approach is talking to the corporate heads of learning and development. That may not always be the learning specialists in themselves in terms of what they're doing, but my audience is very much the heads of learning and development at major corporations. I think what we've seen, and I've done research and I've seen it more and more now, is the word integration. I think integrated learning solutions is really what people are looking for at this level, is bringing it all together. There are lots of different ways we do things, the ways we deliver things, the content and where it is and who's written it, and bringing that all together in some meaningful way for the learner. I think also what we're seeing is much more that it's the journey that's important and not necessarily the destination. And therefore, if you are studying or you are wanting to learn more, continuous professional development in corporates has become more and more important to people, and we need to be able to provide that platform, that resource to do so. So I think company heads of learning and development are looking much more at a platform, an integrated learning platform that offers their employees the chance to learn continuously over time in sound bites or in small amounts, and not necessarily getting a certification for what they're doing. It's much more focused on the skills to do the job or the skills to learn something new to help them move to another job, as it is about the basic knowledge itself. And I think that's very important that people are moving in that direction, and learning specialists are picking that up. I mean, some of our studies showed that 9% of the people we studied felt that achievement recognition, while it's important, credentials weren't really important. They were quite happy to learn something and perhaps be recognized in some way, but they didn't want to spend 1,000 hours studying for an exam for a credential that may be actually not really important to the marketplace.
I think you're talking about a lot of change for both learners and learning professionals and organisations there. You know, you're talking almost a move from this controlled, structured path that we've had, where there's a curriculum, set content, experts, trusted content sources, time to put things together. And now you're moving to a slightly more chaotic, personalized, you know, lots of different things happening. So what do you think are the key trends that you're seeing in organizations as to how they can therefore structure that learning and development for their employees?
Yeah, I think chaos is a good word at the moment, because I think people are throwing stuff at the wall and hoping that their employees find it interesting. I think the key thing, and that's why I've talked earlier about delivery moving to purpose, because I think people are saying, you know, do we really want that in our learning system? I think the key word for me that's happening right now, James, is optionality. I think what we're trying to do within the learning and development space is to provide the learner with as many options as possible to learn. Now, that's a very broad radar there, but it means the content as well as the delivery. So again, learning journeys are now having to be much more individualistic. So it's not just here it all is, everyone has to take this. It's like, here it is, we've curated it, we've filtered it to be relevant to what we believe our employees need to do that particular job. But you can actually make it individual to you, and your individual learning journey can be choosing what you think is correct to move forward and have your own personal development plan. And I think that's important. So optionality, I think, is very important. And that means you can do it as a self-study, and self-learning has also become very important, obviously, given the technology that we have now. But you can also have a choice to take classroom training or to train in cohorts as well. So the optionality, I think, is really important now. And the blend of all of that is also very important as well. Again, purpose is important. You need access to relevant information that's relevant to that particular skill, to that particular job. And that could be off the shelf or customized as well. But optionality is important. You see it almost like a buffet, and you can choose what you want from that, as long as the food on the table is healthy for you, as it were. So if you want to kind of continue that analogy, it's eating the right food, but you choose what the right food is, as opposed to all of that naughty stuff that we like. And then going back to the whole thing about knowledge verification, I think, you know, the credentialing side of this business is become less important to the kind of badges and learn as you go and getting recognition for that. I think people are quite happy to just get the information they want and maybe get recognition that they've actually studied for that or learned that, but they don't necessarily want to go into 1 year or 2 year courses, not at the age we're talking about, not at the age of post-university, post-tertiary education, moving up to the mid-30s. It's like, enough already, you know, we've done that. I just want to know what I need to know to go from being in this job to the next job and be able to prove that I know that and have the skills to do so.
Yeah, I think qualifications, like when they're verified, they have their place, most definitely. But I think the learning industry did go a little bit mad with those. And we kind of started giving out certificates for everyone and not necessarily having a place for that. So I do understand where you're coming from in regards to that. Overall, what is the learning industry offering to meet the client's needs, do you think?
I think, again, if I wanted to use one word for this, it's that they're offering opportunity, I think. And they're offering opportunity to the learning and development teams around the world and corporates in terms of what there is out there systematically. But what this is doing as a secondary thing is they're offering opportunity to the learner as well in terms of access to things that they wouldn't have got before that. So we're almost in a leveling up situation when it comes to balancing out access to learning on that. But going back to the learning industry, there are a lot of companies out there, and you know better than I do what those companies are, that offer terrific solutions to corporates for their employees, whether you can go from LMS to learning platforms to a mixture of that to plugins of other things. All of that stuff is really important, and we've moved very fast in a very short period of time, and that development has been based on, you know, learning from how people have used it and improving on that. I think there's an element of buyer beware on this, that there is a lot of stuff out there that people can grab and put into their organizations that may not have as much value as initially thought. And I think there's companies out there that are very good at offering mediocre software but market it very well, as opposed to those that do really good stuff but don't get the marketing out there so people don't know about it. And there's always a big thing about companies saying we're going to go for the safest bet as opposed to the most attractive one to us, because as we used to say when I was in shorts, you never get fired for hiring IBM. Now you probably will. Those are the sort of things that we do. And I think that, you know, people go for safety rather than necessarily the opportunity that they have. But I think part of that is also that the information, going back to what I said before in terms of purpose and delivery, the information should, for each company, should be filtered and curated to be most relevant to the employees. That there needs to be some sort of balance between the extent of the content that's available, the extent of the learning that you can have, to the relevance of that to the individuals and the employees and the organization. And I think that's where we are now, looking at things and how we actually purpose them for the right audience. But I think the other thing that really is coming through in all of this, and I mentioned it earlier, is lifelong learning is really what's important now. You never stop learning, and people seem to have an insatiable appetite to learn, whatever it may be, but you learn every day. And from my experience as a learner, as a learning specialist, you do learn every day. I love learning every day. Something new just makes it more worthwhile. And I think people are like that too. And there's a bit of a dearth of good corporates that actually understand that their employees want to learn. And they want to learn not just because they have that appetite for learning and that curiosity to learn and that, you know, that capacity, but also they want to see that their organizational seniors are giving them the chance to develop as an individual, either in that organization. And I think learning is something where people see their companies as being responsible to actually improve the level and standards of and skills of their employees. And if they don't see that the company is willing to do that or able to do that, they will leave. they will move to another company that gives them that opportunity to develop themselves as a person. And developing as a person is as important and as much as an asset to the company as the job they do, because you're developing that person to be a better employee. And I think that's part of what we should all be looking at.
I think you've covered such a lot there, Keith, and just to go back to your buffet analogy. So, you won't get fired for, hiring IBM in the same way you won't get fired for putting out some pretty middle of the road, standard sandwich buffet that no one, or for your learning that no one else is going to, complain about or they've seen elsewhere. It's not some, fancy food that you have to try and decode, or, it's safe enough that people go, oh, well, that's what I expected. And I think at the other end, you're talking about these systems that are maybe all bells and whistles, a bit like your saccharine, your donuts and your tasty sugar-filled stuff that gives you the hit, maybe looks quite good, gets a little bit of, oh, that's different, but doesn't have any lasting impact. And I think that's the balance for learning teams, is to try and evolve from the boring sandwich buffet, but not just to something that's a bit gimmicky or something that's not very good for you. Yeah. And there's so much out there to take them on that way. And it's also understanding the ecosystem as well, because we've talked, you've touched on credentials and lifelong learning. But until we recognize that all the way through an organization, until your recruitment teams are looking to understand how they source new employees or promote employees or recognize employees who are lifelong learners, not the one who's just got 20 certificates, but the one who's actually problem solving, growing and evolving. Sometimes we just push back to those previous behaviors because it's easier to put the sandwich buffet out and to offer some certificates and to do some very standard learning, because the rest of it, you've got to change the whole ecosystem of your business to have the impact. And I think that's where it can become challenging for those pioneering or groundbreaking or visionary L&D leaders in their business to try and A, understand what's going on in the tech market, what good looks like, what's going to work for their business, but also educate their business. And sometimes the senior leaders who've survived very well on the sandwich buffet and the traditional way of operating, because that's what that got them to where they are, and they maybe aren't the lifelong learners, they don't recognize those behaviors as important. So I think there's lots of stuff there, but it's not necessarily easy to navigate.
I agree. I mean, absolutely, James. I mean, I feel that in my experience, when you have a CEO or a senior leader responsible for learning who is really engaged and really understands that this is an investment, it's not a cost to their organization, and that, bringing people into the learning journey is really part of their obligation and part of their responsibility, combined with a head of learning and development who's there not just to say we've got the budget for this and we'll take another one of those, but to understand how it all meets the business's requirements, and the individual business owners should be part of that decision, so that that people spend that money wisely. And then a learning specialist or learning platform or learning vendor who actually really can deliver on that in a customized way, then you have something of beauty, quite frankly, and something really powerful that you actually can see the employees benefiting from. It is rare, I have to say, in my experience, it's rare to have that combination of three participants that really get on and do it. You need the funding and you need the vision that comes largely from a senior leader. You need the L&D person who really understands learning behavior and understands the importance of that, and you need a learning vendor in this case who actually can deliver on that customized version. And we're starting to see it in Europe, and we've seen a bit of it in the States, but it's got a long way to go, and I think that's where it really comes into its own.
No, absolutely. And I think there's so many challenges out there and so many opportunities, and it'd be great to really showcase those good examples, because as we know, the good examples out there are not always the good examples. They're the ones that are with that IBM style vendor who's promoted and won a competition because they've promoted and paid a little bit of money to a prize out there. And the whole recognition system out there is not particularly equitable or about actually the best case studies. So it is as you said, hard to find those real examples.
Yeah.
And we've also had the conversation about sometimes you can start making that change, and then if you lose one of those three stools, so you lose the one of the three legs of the stool, you lose the CEO, suddenly, you know, a CEO comes in who's maybe not as visionary or doesn't recognize that, or a learning leader who comes in and goes, oh, I don't quite know how to operate in this situation, or again, a vendor who's, you know, doesn't keep up that commitment and that vision, it can fall apart quite easily. But I think it is about trying to bring those things together and recognize what they are delivering to your organization and the value to employees past, present and future.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. And again, in a slightly different context, but the word purpose is really important too. It's like, why are we doing this, you know, and what is the benefit to us as an organization in doing this, you know, and you know, how are we going to be able to measure that, which is something that's always been an issue. It's like, you know, we can put in millions of dollars or millions of pounds into this, but how do I measure the success of it? And sometimes, you know, numbers aren't helpful in that, you know, and it's more than that. And I think it's important that people understand that they're doing this for, you know, a much bigger cause than, you know, am I going to get dollars and cents? Yes, you can, you know, sort of put numbers against it. You know, the cost of recruiting people to replace those that have left because they're fed up, because they don't feel that they've been looked after and they haven't had their, you know, their development sorted out, is quite significant. And if you put, you know, numbers against all of those that leave, it is a large amount, and you could easily use that budget to actually improve your learning and development platforms.
And I think it's that, again, not always a linear correlation between what you're doing, but understanding what you're trying to affect and cause, and understanding if you are having a positive impact on that over time. Because I've been in-house in learning teams, and as soon as, you know, sales figures goes up, it's the sales team. As soon as they go down, it's the learning team. You know, you see that sometimes. The same with recruitment. You know, you might be having a massive impact, but everyone will be wanting to claim a contribution to that prize, as they should be, because we don't operate in isolation. So this is not going to, by changing your learning culture, impact if you've got poor leadership culture, or if you've got poor working conditions or poor pay, etc. So it needs to be part of a holistic solution. But like you said, people expect this now. People expect to be able to develop their career, to be able to develop themselves, to be able to take an element of control. And if that's not there, then they will feel that that's not meeting their expectations or where they should be in the rest of the market.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a couple of things there that, if I may pick up on. One is that I think this whole way of learning and the real need to learn continuously is a generational thing. And I think a lot of the CEOs and leaders are of a generation that don't quite understand it. And if they do, they're very insightful, and I give them total credit for that. But I think the next generation that come in who have lived with this and experienced it will get it. They do get it now. And when they come into senior leadership positions, I think they will be much more focused and investment on that. I think the second thing is, again, it goes back to trivia. Don't be distracted by stuff that people say you've got to know, whether to be an organization under the microscope. So yes, diversity stuff's important and things like that. Yes, you know, sustainability stuff's important. Yes, don't disregard that, but don't feel that that's, once you've done that, you've ticked the box and that's all you need to do when it comes to compliance learning and things like that. There's far more beneath that the individual needs to know to do, to in terms of what they're interested in and to do their job. That's kind of like corporate compliance learning that everyone has to do and everyone kind of ticks a box. But I'm talking about real learning where they're actually, you know, focusing on things that matter to them. And that's the bit that I'm really talking about, not the standard corporate compliance stuff in that box that regulatory agencies require you to do.
I think that's an interesting point, Keith, because when you talk about that regulatory learning and you push it out and you do it in a tick box way, it, you know, people almost the company's treating it with disdain, and it creates a culture of your learnings being treated with disdain, or even the issues being treated with disdain. So, you know, we're pushing out some tick box learning that isn't really changing behavior. All of our systems around the edges, you know, and our ways of working, if they're not sustainable, or we're not, you know, embracing, you know, diversity or whatever that topic or thing we're looking at, if we're not doing that congruently through the whole organization, that sets something that actually people are pretty savvy to go, right, you're just forcing me to do half an hour on this or go on a day on, you know, unconscious bias. And then as soon as I walk out that room, it's forgotten, but we've ticked the box. We've done a bit of virtue signaling externally. So, you know, those things are to be done in the right way is important, because they set the scene for your culture and they set the scene for how you approach learning. Because if you think those times I force someone to go to learning in the business, if they are tick boxy, how much do I really then believe that, you know, my own learning is something that's valued, that I should be taking control of my learning? So I get what you're saying, but I've seen so many times people just treat those things with contempt and then expect people to behave differently elsewhere, and it just doesn't work.
I think that, you know, that's a really good point, and I've come across that so many times, especially in the financial services and in the banking space in particular, where that regulatory requirement became very, very strict and stringent and omnipresent the whole time, and people just said, oh, not another learning. So the good stuff that you were trying to create for employees to really get their skills enhanced was being looked at with a kind of sense of negativity, because it's like, here we go again, another thing. And so what we tried to do was kind of separate the corporate compliance training from the actual personal development training in that way, and make it different so that you'd go into it with a better, you know, better perspective than I have to do this. You wanted to go into it because I really want to do this, or I'd like to do this, or I'm interested in doing it. And that, and we separated that in a way to kind of compliance related training, and not even, I don't think we even called it training in some way, but just compliance requirements and personal development. And you started to separate that so that you wouldn't get thrown into the general corporate training bucket. I think the other thing also, if I may, on this is this whole thing that you touched on just now is, you know, leadership is really important. The tone from the top in terms of what is important to them, that cascades down through the organization culturally and by example, is really important when it comes to learning as well. If you have somebody who doesn't pay lip service but really believes and is passionate about learning and about development of their employees, it will come across that way and people will pick it up that way. It's so easy to see people that say they believe in it but really don't put their money where their mouth is, or don't put their mouth where their mouth is sometimes, so where the words are, I should say. So I think, you know, there's that element as well, that you really have to believe in it from the top down. And that's partly why I'm now, you know, talking to boards and talking to board members about the need to actually learn about risk management when it comes to the organization that they are responsible for. Because if you don't understand risk management, if you're not willing to learn about risk management, then how can you expect people beneath you who need to know? And that's why it's important to start at that level and really have it cascade down through the organization.
Fab. Okay. And so we covered loads of stuff, Keith. So what's coming next for you? You've mentioned you're talking to boards a bit about risk management, but what exactly are you working on?
A couple of things I'm working on. One is certainly this is taking a lot of my time and my passion and my commitment in terms of talking to boards worldwide about the need to be educated by people that actually are practitioners who are experts in their field. So that's one element, and that's what I'm passionate and I believe in. There's another thing that I'm spending time on, and that is to create a platform online that is a hub for learning in a specific way, and that is really a curated and filtered hub that people can go to and either learn in the broadest sense that we've talked about today, learn, find the content, you know, have it delivered to them in the way that they want to, and have it also purposeful to what they are doing in a job. So we're building that now and working on that. And that's an exciting challenge because there's nothing really like that in the marketplace and really focusing on how we can deliver that. It's one of these things where, and you know this better than I do, Katie and James, that you can build the best thing in the market, but if nobody knows about it, then you might as well pack up and go home. So the building of it is really important because it is going to be unique and it's going to be forward thinking, but you know, we need as many people to know about it as possible. So that's going to be part of my job too, is going out there and talking, which, as you know, I don't like doing.
No, that sounds really interesting. I know James and I have spoken to you about it before, and we're looking forward to seeing that come from you. So thank you very much for joining us today, Keith. I know we could talk for hours and hours and hours, but we tend to keep our podcast slightly shorter than that. So if people want to get in contact with you or find out a bit more about you, how do they do that?
Great, thank you for asking. The best way is to email me, and the best address, quite honestly, is my personal one, which is keith.waite@gmail.com. It's easy to remember. But I'd love to hear from people. You can also find me on LinkedIn, and I'd love to hear from you and learn more from anyone out there who's interested as well. So I do thank you for your time too, for allowing me the opportunity to chat to you today.
Awesome, thank you very much. And we'll put those links to your email address and LinkedIn in our show notes below. So thank you very much again, Keith.
Wonderful, thank you. Thanks, James, Katie, thanks so much. Take care.
Thank you, great to catch up. Cheers, Keith.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Reinvented podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you've not already done so, please follow our podcast. And if the Learning Effect can help you and your organisation, please do get in touch. You can find both James and Katie on LinkedIn, and our contact details are in the show notes below.